Guys, welcome to this bonus episode of Pop Kitchen. Today, we are going to be doing a spoiler conversation for Martin Scorsese's latest film, Killers of the Flower Moon. If you haven't yet heard George's review from last week, please go and check it out. That is a spoiler-free review of the film. Since you've seen it, I've now had the chance to see it. By the time this comes out, the film will be out. No, it's out. It's already out already. And of course, we'd love to hear your thoughts if you haven't already sent them in. So send your thoughts into hello@popkitchenpodcast.com. But George, just in case people have got no idea what film we're talking about, Killers of the Flower Moon, very quickly.
So latest film from Martin Scorsese about a true life story of 1920s Oklahoma in Osage County, where the people of the Osage tribe, Native American tribe, were murdered in high numbers at a time when the Osage people were very wealthy and affluent as a result of discovering oil on their land. And you have a lot of white characters trying to inveigle themselves into the families of the Osage tribe and the Osage people to get their hands on their money and their property, bearing with it a lot of violence.
So, you know what's interesting about going to see this film is that one of the things I think probably like needlessly has been hanging over going to watch this film is the runtime.
Yeah.
It's 3.5 hours long. You and I have sort of been discussing it a lot and how we plan around that. And it's like, even though it's Martin Scorsese, and we're very excited by it, it's a little bit like, oh, I've got to settle in for it. And I remember like jokingly between you and I saw it with your girlfriend, I was like, I need to like stop drinking water then.
Yeah.
And I'll need to pee right before. And then I'm not going to drink till like an
which
hour
is
and a half.
Fair enough.
Which is totally uncool. It's just like not what is interesting about this film.
Yeah.
And I got to we got to this like press screening, which was great. Had the most comfy seats I could ever hope for. And I was like, oh, for 3.5 hours, this is great.
Yeah.
And it had the reclining.
Yeah.
And I was reclining. I was like, great, I can like lean back and just let this wash over. And funnily enough, you know, I got into the film and I started leaning back. But very quickly, within an hour, I sat forward and I was watching it forward. And it was just, I completely agree with you. I think Martin Scorsese had such a masterful grasp and understanding of how to tell that story. Mm. It was like metronomic in its pace and how it went through. And literally the score, the plucking guitar underneath it literally ticks you through. Absolutely, I think Robert De Niro is kicking into a completely higher gear.
Isn't he just?
And you know, I think of the Scorsese I've seen, it's actually some of the most sinister storytelling I've seen from him, but less so of like a depiction of violence, but in this nasty understanding between the audience and the characters of what's really going on underneath. And I just found it like there's sort of moments in the late second hour which are really difficult to watch, like certain scenes in like spoiler territory now, like when Leonardo DiCaprio's character is really in like the depths of poisoning Molly, and he's like kissing her neck while she's there, and the stench of death is following his character in the flies.
Yeah.
And
that's a good symbolism. Yeah,
yeah. And everyone's just great. I thought Jesse Plemons was brilliant.
Yeah,
I feel like he's so good at letting really great dialogue speak for itself and knowing when to just let someone else react or to leave a space. I had a really good time with it. I think it deserves to be in the conversation next to films like There Will Be Blood as one of the great cinematic art pieces, as a commentary on the formation of American society and greed and capitalism, and seeing strands of where our society is now through to those moments in time.
It's really good, isn't it?
It's really, really
good. It's a really good film.
I just did the length was there, but I was interested in every part of it.
Did you have that feeling I did, where as soon as it begins, you're kind of I'm so gripped.
I'm just there, and it's just like, here we are. I'm gonna drip feed you the story very consistently, very slowly. And every single moment, I was like, I'm very curious as to what happens next.
Yes.
And even though a lot of the delivery, it doesn't scream and shout. A lot of it's sort of whispered, like under that. And a lot of the responses are, we can do that under this. And so it's very much at the same tone.
I read a good review that said that just talking about the runtime.
Yeah.
And this critic was
sorry to labor. It's just, it has been on my mind going into it.
But this critic made this point about the runtime where he was like, his theory is that what the extended runtime enables you to do is realize how long it took before any justice was.
Yeah.
How long it took. Because Jesse Plemons, I want to say, turns up 2.5 hours.
Yeah, it's in the third hour.
It's really, really long time.
Yeah.
And like, I think that's a really interesting point. Just the thing about Jesse Plemons' character, when I saw
the film starts, people have already died.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. When Scorsese, when I saw him talk, the original version of the script pre-COVID was Leo was going to play Jesse Plemons' character.
I totally see that.
And the film would have begun, he would have been one of the, you know, the formation of the FBI coming down to Oklahoma. Yeah. But it just says a lot about how much the film has changed that you actually have 2.5 hours prior to that now before that even comes. I agree when you said about the upper register, the higher gear for De Niro. I just was watching him thinking, I haven't seen you this switched on in such a long time. Yeah.
He was great in The Irishman.
Oh yeah, of course.
A few years ago. But
do you remember putting on The Irishman? He's like, he's kind of reacting to everyone. He's being taken through. In the same way that Leo kind of reacts to a lot in this.
Yeah.
But he's great.
What have I seen Lily Gladstone in before?
Well, not a lot of, nothing as big as this. She's done a bit of TV. Yeah, absolutely fantastic. She did a lot. She's done a couple of Kelly Reichardt films, those kind of small indie films. But yeah, she's brilliant.
She's really good. What, and again, like not shouting and screaming for an Oscar, but like, I definitely think she'll be nominated.
Oh, absolutely. All of them, I think, will be.
Yeah.
The, because what was great is, because I'd seen it, I gave up my ticket to my girlfriend to go in my place. And I was really glad you guys got to see it together. And Anna came home and we chatted about it. And like, we were talking about the violence in the film. And what I said to her before she went, I said, you know, the violence in it is very cold. It's really just clinical. It's kind of like pop.
Matter of fact, yeah.
Very matter of fact. And like the scene where they kill... Anna in the woods. Yeah. Like,
and you know that's happened. It's not a surprise.
Clumsy. They kind of hold her up straight and shoot her down. And she kind of stops from
and
she falls over. But then, you know, her dress.
The way that like everyone's not killed properly because, like, you know, you've got to shoot them through this way. And it's just so clumsy and flimsy. And,
yeah. The bit I missed, by the way, I mentioned that I had to like nip out. So I got up. So there's that great scene in the Masonic Lodge where he spanks.
Yes.
Which is just brilliant.
It tells them all.
So that scene ended. I got up because I don't know if you found this, but like I said, the first 90 minutes, it was every scene seemed really important.
Yeah.
So I really struggled to get, I mean, the whole film really.
I couldn't cut it.
Yeah.
I got out of that and I was like, I don't know where I cut it.
Maybe when Jesse Plemons turns up, but that's not even. That's not
I'm in though. I'm there.
Sorry. Anyway, so he spanks in the Masonic Hall. That scene ends. I get up. As I'm walking out, that's when the private detective gets murdered.
Yeah.
And I see that. Run upstairs, because the toilets are upstairs in this cinema. So I'm going to go all the way down. Run all the way down. And I walk in and the bank vault has exploded with lots of like dollar bills around. Yeah. And I was like, oh, this seems really important.
But it's just like, it's really one passing
moment.
But
luckily, my girlfriend explained that it was just about the dynamite.
It felt like, you know, that it felt like a top tier HBO dense historical series that I'd sat down and binged.
Yeah.
But not in a way that it felt like I saw like lots of different pacing structures in one, but just in terms of the amount of detail and the amount of attention that I imagine goes into telling a much longer story over multiple hours is, I would like to see it again.
Yeah, me too. Enough. That's the thing.
Even though coming out of that, I'd love to see it again. I'd love to watch it with subtitles.
Do you think you're going to save it for the small screen to rewatch it?
Yeah, I don't know. I might see how I feel coming into next week and whether or not I fancy it and if I've got the time to see it. Because I think a friend of mine was interested in seeing it and I'm like, yes, preliminarily, but just timing wise and thing.
But what
it deserves a rewatch.
Absolutely.
For me,
that's the thing. You're like, there's so much in there and it's so well made. You can really dive back in.
I thought it was really interesting. Like, even you brought this point up in your review about how, like, the presentation of white people being poorer than the Native Americans in this county, which we've just not really seen depicted. And when Molly starts to become aware of the danger and the sort of slightly nasty undercurrent of white people coming off this train and into their state, and they're depicted like this disgusting, wretched, scarred swarm. And I just thought that was such an interesting thing.
Yeah, sorry, it's flipping the lens. It's 100%. Like, if you take how Native Americans would have been depicted, you know, 50 years ago or in film history, as one-dimensional savagery, you know, just complete misrepresentation. Yeah. And what I think Scorsese does really well is flip that, and you have this, like I said, really well cast, like ensemble of white characters who are mean faced and kind of like that wear so much drama on their face.
Yes, I thought it was interesting as how, like, you know, the Osage tribes, spirituality is very important, and they have traditions, and it's something that, like, you can see runs through their blood and through generations of their family. But the white characters who come off the trains in this almost, they sort of exchange it like a token, or they wear it like just a dressing to absorb. It's sinister and nasty, but it never needs to tell you it. You understand from the get-go. And you know what? Funnily enough, like, a lot of what happened in the end, I kind of could see coming. I kind of thought, you know, Erzberg Hart's kind of going to end up in this position where he'll either get killed or he'll be torn between warring like very much powerful heads trying to manipulate him, because he doesn't really have the wits to either understand, I think, the horrors of what he's doing and the implications of it.
And who
he's working for and what actually is at stake. And it's that wonderful shot when Brendan Fraser invites him into this room, this very much like old school chairs.
The whole white community is there.
Whole white community. It's the entire oil industry trying to basically get him to not say a stupid thing. Yeah. And you realise what's at stake here. And this sense that Ernst Burkhart and William Hale were as slippery and as slimy as the oil running under the soil beneath them.
Yeah.
Just horrible.
Yeah.
Horrible, horrible, horrible.
What I liked about the ending, where we have this kind of coda where it cuts to a radio play.
Yes.
Being shot. And the cameo I mentioned was from Jack White of the White Stripes. I don't know if you saw that. He's one of the people reading out of the radio. And I was like, Jack White?
Yeah.
And then obviously Martin Scorsese comes on.
Yes.
Which I thought was a really kind of fun, witty...
Didn't bother me.
It didn't bother me.
It was the last line of dialogue for the film. Yeah. So it's like... There wasn't an exchange left apart from him to just sign his signature on the film, essentially.
And what I like about that little radio hour play thing, it kind of was taught for me. It was like about how different cultures deal with these stories and subsume these stories. So it's like in the kind of white American culture, this story was kind of remembered as a kind of frivolity, a kind of fun radio hour anecdote.
Yeah.
It becomes anecdotal. Whereas for the, you know, the Osage people, this was a deep, deep trauma and is remembered probably, you know, will be remembered for generations and not just in a half hour radio play like it is for the white audience. I also think that you mentioned Brendan Fraser. Great to have Brendan Fraser back in general. He's in this for about 5 minutes. And
yeah, that's like more scenes than I think you said. He's got like 3-4 scenes.
It's still probably 5 minutes of runtime.
No, it's like 10.
Okay,
anyway,
fine.
Yeah, he's a small part of it.
And it is clear that he's either filming this during the whale or just after the whale.
He's carrying a lot of whale weight.
I don't want to denigrate his performance at all, but what I liked in that scene when he brought him into the room, right?
The very first... Oh, no, sorry. Yeah,
with all the white people in the room. I felt like saying to Brendan Fraser, I think it's evident that you've been sat in a role for ages, you know, because as in The Whale, he's sedentary.
Yeah, sure, yeah.
And Brendan Fraser is stood up. And honestly, I feel like he doesn't know what to do with his hands. He's like, you must decide which road to take. They beat you and tortured you.
I have not consulted with my client.
And I think he stands
up. And
John
Lithgow is like, there is no precedent for this.
I think, honestly, part of Brendan Fraser's brain is like, I'm stood up and I don't know what to do with myself. I've been sat down for 3 months.
I love I think it's such a big director flex to have the likes of Clemens, Lithgow and Fraser come in 2.5 hours into your film and like have like decent roles to play in that. Mm. And like, it's sort of an Oppenheimer-esque courtroom legal drama going on, but less disorienting than I think.
Oppenheimer's, I'm glad you brought that up because I think watching Killers of the Flower Moon made me kind of crystallize some things how I felt about Oppenheimer and actually as a compliment to Killers of the Flower Moon, because my thing with Oppenheimer was that by the time I got to the end, I just felt like I'd been pummeled with someone reading someone's biography at me, just throwing information at me incessantly for 3 hours. Not to say I didn't like it, but I just found it exhausting by the end. I was like ready for the film to end. But I never felt that with this. No. And, you know, that's why, you know, Killers of the Flower Moon is just on a higher tier than something like Oppenheimer. Scorsese is a better filmmaker than Nolan. And don't get me wrong, Nolan's got 40 years to catch up.
Which is fine. No one's a better filmmaker really than Scorsese.
Exactly. But like what Scorsese is doing, he's giving so much chance for you to think and for you to engage, and the silences, it's really clever. The thing I was thinking about, like, there's so many things that Scorsese doesn't have to do in this film to engage you, but he does, and he does successfully. Because obviously with every chance, everything he does is always a risk that it won't work. But that bit towards the end where a new Native American character arrives in town. He's this young man.
Yeah.
And the camera sort of lingers on him and follows him and kind of threads him into the scenes here and there.
And very carefully and
you're kind of thinking, who is this guy? And then obviously, probably 20 minutes later, it's just revealed that he's one of the FBI agents, right? Spy. And that's it. There's no other great reveal about that character, but it's just an excellent way of keeping you hooked into the story.
And that whole idea of like people not knowing what the Federal Bureau investigators were, and that introduction of like government investigating the business out of state.
Yeah.
That's quite quite an interesting part just to weave into history, like federal. It's yeah. like. Jesse Plemons very casual about it. Yeah. That's what he was doing.
I love that scene with De Niro where he's like, I don't want my money in Denver. I want to get it here. You know, I don't want to speak to Denver. Oh, it's just
and
so
I think
good.
I think maybe wrongly in my head, again, like completely uninformed about the history. When you hear about lands and property and wealth being stolen from Native Americans, you think about... like, you know, big swarming of people running in and killing and taking it immediately yeah. in one evening. But what this film does so well is that this didn't happen overnight. This wasn't one siege. This was slowly infected through generations of marriages and children and slowly poisoning and ousting people from the land that they grew up on. Like, that's such an... that's the thing I didn't really think I'd think about, is how it was just this slow poisoning of everything.
It's a really brilliant film.
It's really good.
And Anna thought the exact same thing when I got home. She thought it was one of the best films she's ever seen, actually.
It's really, really good.
I can't wait to watch it again.
And just on, again, to labour this point of people going, 3.5 hours? God, I don't want to see a film. And it's like, yes, in so many ways, you are right. And I think this year, we've seen so many three-hour films this year, from Blonde to Babylon to Avatar, like just to name a few. I feel like there's been a lot this year. What I will say is that, like, yes, you can see this on the small screen, but I really do urge you to give yourself over to that big screen experience. Challenge yourself to be locked in the room and trust in, of all the filmmakers to do this, Martin Scorsese really is the one. This is the one time where I, like, just forget about the runtime, take the evening off and go and see it. And I promise you, you'll get more out of it than if you saw it at home, stopping and starting or split over two nights, which is realistic how I'm going to probably have to watch it next time I do. But I'm so glad I've experienced it in this way with Martin Scorsese to just let me just take this for you and tell you the story. It's a really special moment to get that. I also think there's something to be said about, you know, you and I are watching close to 100 films a year, which is great, and we love it. And we're seeing loads of other filmmakers attempt to do what Martin Scorsese is trying to do. And when we see someone really successfully pull it off, I have such an extra appreciation for it. And not just seeing 100 films a year, criticizing them too. And when I'm half an hour in, and I almost am like, everything's getting full marks, I'm just going to close my internal critic book. And just kind of, because when the film's the sort of average, I'm very much got an internal monologue going in my head of why this isn't working, and I start to form my answer.
Yeah.
But with this, I'm like, I'm just going to close this and like just watch this itself. Now.
Yeah. Yeah, you can relax. Yeah. Yeah, it actually reminds me that there was, I remember hearing an anecdote of a art teacher or some sort of art professor, whatever, or some art course somewhere in the world, where one of the professors gave students this exercise to go to a gallery, find a painting, and sit in front of it and look at it for 3 hours straight.
Right, yeah.
And you know, it's an interesting exercise, and obviously it was talked about in the idea of like attention span and stuff, but it's like, yeah, the first 40 minutes will be really uncomfortable.
Mm.
But then the longer you spend time with it, the more you will see and the more will unravel. And by the, you will be looking at a completely different painting by the time you finish that 3 hours.
Mm.
Now, Killers of the Flower Moon is nowhere near as difficult as doing something like that, but there is something to be said that the longer you are spent in the presence of something, It is actually a testament to long films.
Yeah,
because the Flower Moon is
why they should
of
exist.
Why
sometimes.
Long films should exist. There's nothing arrogant or indulgent about it. It is completely necessary for this story.
Yeah.
Again, guys, if you've seen Killers of the Flower Moon, we would really like to hear your opinions of it. We as you can tell, we both think it's brilliant. And
often, like, there's some moments of humour in there. It's like, especially towards the end, the sort of clumsiness of the communication.
The bit that really made me laugh out loud was when the guy was like, you know, he's like at the will writer, and the guy's like, you do realise that I now think you're going to adopt and kill those children.
Yeah, exactly.
It's witty. It's funny. It's brilliant. Please let us know what you think if you have seen it by writing in to hello@pulpkitchenpodcast.com.
Before we wrap up today, Tyler writes into hello@popkitchenpodcast.com just like you can. And he says, hi guys, I was at the London Film Festival last night for the opening gala of Killers of the Flower Moon and wanted to share my thoughts. I thought the film was incredible.
Yeah.
The story really keeps you hooked to find out where it will all end up, and the performances were great. Leo was great as always, but I wouldn't say it's his best like some would have said. Lily Gladstone, on the other hand, was the standout performance. For me, she played Molly very well.
Mm.
Just a little thought on the film. Very excited to hear your review. Cheers, lads. Look forward to more reviews past 100. Tyler, thank you so much. Oh, sorry, just one more thought. I know you just outroed it. There's another thing the film does, which that it doesn't ever try to withhold a reveal of who's really bad and who's good. Mm. It's understood like really immediately, which I think again takes real discipline to go, I don't need to withhold this information from you and like, oh, is Robert De Niro the one pulling the strings? Like from the very beginning, he's like, you like girls? You want to come here? Yeah. What if you married her? And just sort of, you know.
But what it does, I think, is makes you feel uncomfortable underneath his charm.
Yes.
Because he's a very charming, you know, genial.
Smart,
speaks
sharp.
Their language. Oh, and the use of sometimes subtitling and sometimes not subtitling.
Very smart. Yeah. And even when it wasn't, you sometimes still sort of got exactly what they were saying.
That's
without,
it. Yeah. I think it's, that's an interesting tool.
Yeah. Anyway, that's all.
Anyway, go see it.